So welcome, those of you in the class and those of you at home, and welcome to our class. I will begin as we usually do by taking refuge together and generating a mind of enlightenment. We'll say the prayers, I'll begin the class, and during the class this period is for meditation and asking questions. So please get comfortable in your seat. Ideally this means that your spine will be elongated, your shoulders will be relaxed. Your hands and feet will feel comfortable. And you can close your eyes completely or just leave them partially open. So when all this has been accomplished, just relax and let the body breathe itself. And while the body breathes itself, Shakyamuni Buddha, who is sitting on a golden throne, appears in the space in front of you. He is surrounded by your spiritual mentors, teachers of the lineage, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, meditational deities and protectors. Meanwhile, all sentient beings surround you, with everyone facing the Buddha and his entourage. Then recollect that everyone has an equal wish to avoid suffering, equally wishes to be happy, and equally lacks genuine happiness. Remember also that the causes of suffering can be eliminated, and the potential for genuine happiness abides equally within all of us. So to dispel the causes of suffering and actualize the potential we have, we need to rely upon the teacher, the Buddha, his Dharma, and his community. If you want to do this to achieve enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. Then to affirm the safe direction you have taken, join me in saying, I go for refuge as I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to the benefit of all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to the benefit of all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Now from the heart of Shakyamuni Buddha and in the hearts of each member of the spiritual entourage, think that lights and nectars pour forth, be streamed over you and all sentient beings surrounding you. And obstacles to spiritual practice are removed, and your potentials of method and wisdom are empowered. You recollect the four immeasurable thoughts of love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. You decide to establish these four immeasurable thoughts within your own mental continuum, and then to place every other being within those four states. To affirm this, join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness in its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering in its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and faithful for enemies. Again, from the heart of each enlightened being above you, lights and nectar stream forth, washing over you and all the beings who surround you. All spiritual hindrances and obstacles are washed away, and the potentials we have to actualize the mind of enlightenment and enlightenment itself are supported so that those potentials start to flourish. to accumulate the merit and the and to increase that merit, as well as purifying the mind, will now engage in the seven-limb prayer. Please join me in saying, reverently I prostrate with my body, speech and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imaginary. I declare all my negative actions, accumulated since beginning this time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of psychic existence and turn the wheel of time for the new years. I dedicate my own and other spirits to the grace of the Rachamite. Now, to prevent us clinging to the merit accumulated and the empty slates following our purification, recollect emptiness and dependent arising. Then, through this recollection of transforming body, speech, and mind, your merits and all the objects of the senses into a pure land. If you wish to offer this to the Buddha and his entourage. So join me in saying, this ground, anointed with perfume, stirring with fire, the dawn of Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this is the Buddha field of offering. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Yidam Buratnamada Kamayataya. So you've released the offering and the Buddha has accepted it. He smiles. You meet his gaze. And looking into the eyes of the Buddha, allow yourself to feel accepted and at ease. Also allow a sense of confidence to arise that everything in your practice will come to fruition. Now an emanation of the Buddha leaves his heart. It moves through space and comes to the bottom of the crown of your head, facing in the same direction you are. And then the emanation starts to descend down to the level of your heart, where it begins to expand, filling your body and mind with light, which pours out through the pores of the skin, filling the 10 directions of space, and establishing every being within space to now be within the light state. So there is a sense of confidence arises to fulfill the needs of yourself and the needs of all sentient beings. And in this vast space of enlightenment, imagine you can hear the echoes of the mantra of Shakyamuni Buddha. Hearing it, you join in, reciting three times and a few times under your breath. Please join me in saying, Now the lights begin to withdraw from the 10 directions of space and they re-enter your heart. You can feel the seat beneath you, you can hear the different sounds, you know you're embodied. So when you become aware of ordinary appearances, just recollect that this meditation was one of imagination. which has imprinted the mind with conditions which will bring about enlightenment when they meet the right causes. So again, just affirm that you're here studying to bring about your own enlightenment so that you can help everyone else become enlightened. And then breathing in through nostrils, exhale through mouth, and just let your eyes flutter open. Okay, so again, welcome to those of you at the class and to the talks online and anybody else that's also there. This is what we've covered. We've gone through 4 weeks already, up to week five. So we began by looking at the need for a teacher. So there's a need given, there's a reason for seeking a teacher and the need of a teacher. What is it?
We don't know how to get to enlightenment.
We don't know how to get to enlightenment, and in particular, specifically, we don't know how to gather the two accumulations, nor how to purify the two obscurations. But that's why we need a teacher. Now, there are different types of teacher, and many of them teach on different levels of the path. Like, anybody recommend a couple of the types of teacher we need on our path?
Professor.
We need a professor, which is really helpful.
Root guru.
Ritual master.
Yes. And so on. And we also, these are some of the teachers we need. We also have to find a teacher. And when we come across this person, we need to check them out. And one thing we can do is just check the lineage they belong to, have a look at their students, how they're regarded by others, and so forth. Now, as we're all involved in the Mahayana path, we need to find ourselves a Mahayana teacher. And ideally, this teacher should have 10 qualities. So Ben, could you give us the first three?
Serene.
And
then
thoroughly pacified. And these three qualities relate to what?
Renunciation.
The three higher trainings. The higher training in ethics, concentration, and wisdom. Now, there are another three qualities that the teacher also needs. Ian, can you recollect any of them?
Thorough knowledge of the Dharma.
Knowledge of Dharma.
They should have a realization of emptiness.
Okay.
They at least should know more than you.
Yep, excellent. Okay, and in terms of helping the student, there are four qualities the teacher needs. Bev, can you give us a couple of them? They need to be attentive. What else? Their motivation has to be one of compassionate love, yep, or love and kindness.
I know the acronym, but I can't remember how to get it
past. They need to be skillful, and they need to also have be enthusiastic. Good, anyway, doing pretty good. Now, when it comes to the students themselves, so Georgia, you're online, so I'll just ask you, what are the five qualities that a student needs?
She's coming, non-biased.
Non-biased, that's good, yep, that's the first one.
Yeah, intelligent.
Intelligent, great. Oh.
Great diligence.
Great diligence, that's right.
Attentive.
Yep, and
respectful.
Excellent, guys,
Georgia. Wow, gold stars.
Yeah, so the qualities are the five student qualities. And last of all, there's a way of relying upon the teacher. So there's these nine similes that we talked about last week. So nine student attitudes they need to bring to the relationship. What's the first one?
Wise obedient child.
Like a wise obedient child. What's the next one?
Bhadra.
Like a Bhadra. Chris?
Like the earth,
that's right. Bev, what's the next one?
A sweeper, a rogue? No, is that the...
Yeah, you've got a sweeper. Sorry, you have a servant, a sweeper, a rogue. Then what happens?
A boat.
That's
a dog.
The dog.
And then the boat. That's right. Okay, good.
Who's the
mountain? Oh, the first is, I'm sorry. Honestly, after the earth was the mountain, wasn't it?
Mountain.
And the servant and sweeper. Thank you. Good, good, it's good, pretty good. So I'll ask this again next week, right? Yeah, otherwise, no, next year you'll be here doing the same thing again, and next year you'll be the same again. It's like, when you get it.
That's right, yes.
Okay, and of course, I'll be relying upon these books, these, just stayed here. Now, today, a lot of material is coming from this deep blue book called The Heart of the Path by Lama Zofrisha and Steps on the Path to Enlightenment by Geshe Sopa. Of course, again, there's really good explanation in this corner book called Relating to Spiritual Teachers by Alexander Berzin. So basically today we're going to be looking at some of the disadvantages of devoting yourself incorrectly to the teacher. So there are 8 disadvantages that we're going to be looking at. And secondly, attitudes of correct devotion. Here we have 12. So, like, what I want you to do is just like tonight, find one that really resonates with you, and then look over and find one other one. Right, so you've got to find something, one disadvantage of incorrect devotion, and one for the correct devotion. So, in other words, there's 20 things we're going to go through here. You just need to get 2. One on the negative side, one on the positive side. So I will ask you next week to name one of the negative outcomes and then one of the positive outcomes. So we begin by asking, first of all, what is this thing called devotion? Of course, devotion is an English word. I think I don't know what the Sanskrit word was, but I did know it one time. And Shocking Trump has got quite an interesting way of what this word means, how to devote yourself to a spiritual mentor. Basically, I mean, you need to do these 2 things if you have this, if you try to create this type of relationship. First of all, you have to model yourself on the teacher. And secondly, you need to follow their advice. So this is, you're doing these 2 things, you're devoting yourself to the teacher. Max says that correctly devoting oneself to a spiritual teacher means training the mind to see their qualities with gratitude while aligning your physical actions with their ethical instructions. So training the mind to see their qualities with gratitude, and again, just aligning your actions with their instructions. So he says, the activity is to focus on the qualities of your teacher with a firm conviction that they are a fact. He says, this helps us to relate to the teacher in a healthy manner with our thoughts. Now, this is a very good advice by His Holiness the Dalai Lama about this stage of the practice, because of course this, today we're looking at this, but next week we're looking at how to see your teacher as the Buddha. So now you need to do something before you see your teacher as the Buddha and before you actually engage with this, and that is to actually acknowledge any faults that your teacher might have. The idea is to do this now so that you don't do it later and get yourself all caught up. So it's not that, so you know, when you look, so many years ago, I saw a teacher on television, you know? So I saw a fault immediately. It was in picking his nose. So it's like, I wanted to hear what he had to say. So which was, to me, was much more important. Now there are types of teachers you will have a natural aversion to. It just works out that way. Like, I know some people who can't, who find it very difficult if they don't like the voice of the teacher. You know, so that can really throw people off. So you need to look at these, what you see as faults, acknowledge them, and then go and sort of not overlook them. You must be able to acknowledge them here now, but that, like, it should not become an impediment to having a relationship with someone. Now, like for instance, suppose you, you're a woman and you fell in love with a guy, and this fellow was lame. Have you looked? So either of you might look at the guy, so that's a fault. But you go, yeah, well, somebody looks, not a problem to me. I said, again, the reason for doing this early, before you start looking at all their good qualities and go, oh, here's the scars with them. When you devote yourself to them. You need to do this first, because later on, if you don't do it, and now you're going to come to see your teacher as a Buddha, and now you see the faults, then it's not going to work for you. Now, because Buddhas don't have faults, do they?
And I just thought, that's okay, at some level I'll get it, so I tried not to let it get me irritated, because that I was missing out on the teaching, but someone got really irritated when they left, and they, but then after a while you start to tune into it, and then you can understand it, so I thought, I'm glad I didn't, you know, get too locked off, because after a while, you tune into it, whereas the other person just sort of totally put a block down and they missed out on the teaching.
So, Georgia, just to reiterate, so Beverly's telling us a story about how she took teachings from a mentor, a guru. He wasn't able to speak English very well. And of course, this sort of irritated her. And it irritated other people in the class too, and one or two of them left, but Beverly didn't, so she sat there and she had to, like that, and finally, over time it became clearer and clearer. In fact, when you told us, I thought, now this is a great example of love, it's like Rinpoche, because many people would come along and then they couldn't bear the way you taught, and they left.
Eddie, is it important that the teacher has some self-awareness of these faults?
I guess some things that they just sort of really can't change much, right? Like the way love is over teachers. There's only one story to where Trungpa Rinpoche appeared on stage and he appeared drunk. And his voice slurring and everything like that. It was at a university of some type. When they walked into the lift, he was perfectly sober. It's just like a deliberate appearance on his part for somebody in the audience there. So anyway, I'm just saying, when we begin, we're investigating the teacher. If you perceive faults in them, acknowledge them, but then in your own time, work it through until you can let it go. So it's no longer, it's no longer an obstacle to your relationship. Okay, so now here we're going to look at, so this following on is these eight faults. So the first fault is that if we criticize our guru, we criticize all the Buddhas. So criticizing an authentic spiritual teacher creates a psychological block that will sever your connection to the universal qualities of wisdom and compassion that the teacher represents. In brief, you reject happiness and embrace suffering instead. Now, it says here, when we look at our teacher with a critical, fault-finding eye, we are not hurting them as individuals. Rather, what happens is you damage your own ability to mirror the very virtues you wish to grow. And so, like I said, this is as you're probably all aware of and have had experiences of this. When you're angry or upset, you can't see the good qualities of the person. If you have attachment to them, you can't see the bad qualities of them. Who does this hurt? And there isn't anybody, any sentient being, human being, who's all good or all bad. So we've all got a number of faults, we've all got a number of qualities. This is the idea, is like find those faults first. Acknowledge them, put them aside and go, well, yeah, I know they've got those, but I am more interested in their good qualities. This is the sort of attitude you have to take. It's the same kind of relationship, you know, what many of us are, aren't we? So, you know, your husband or your wife has good qualities and bad qualities. What happens if you focus on the bad qualities, the qualities in particular you don't like?
You live a miserable life.
Well, that's basically right, no? You live a miserable life, right? And even though your partner might have faults, when you focus on the good qualities, what happens?
You have a miserable life.
Oh, one of the students said, for those of you online, you have a miserable life focusing on the good qualities. Of course, it doesn't happen, we have a good life. So it's the same sort of thing here, aren't we? We did acknowledge the faults. Was another scholar there, yes, but he also has his other major good qualities, and that's what I'm really interested in learning about. Well, I mean, our life, well, we've got the same Sarah life, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of suffering, isn't it? Basically. Okay, so this is it. We criticize our guru, we criticize all the Buddhas. Secondly, moments of anger towards the guru lead to rebirth in the house. So it says here, each moment of anger towards our guru destroys merit for eons equal in number to the moments of our anger, and will cause us to be reborn in the hells and suffer for the same number of eons. In other words, directed anger toward a spiritual teacher destabilizes your internal foundation of respect, which immediately fractures your capacity to internalize their ethical advice, and it will prevent long-term positive development. This is a brief, angry thoughts about your teacher destroy your root of merit. Now you know, so, if you take on a teacher and they take you on, it's like the she said the fun period is over. It's like now you know, you're both in this together, you're gonna work, he's gonna support you and walk with you. Which will involve him criticizing you, telling you where you've gone wrong and what you could do better. And you rarely ever find a teacher who says you're doing really well. I don't know, I can really remember as an exception is Geshe Sopa. But so he's very encouraging. He would just say, I might try again and so forth. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if the Lamas are much more easygoing with the lay community and much more stronger with the ordained community. So one of the questions that comes up about this is, when you hold on to resentment against someone who points out your flaws, what are you protecting and what are you defending?
Our pride.
Ego, isn't it? Ego. Self, wrong sense of self, and then all the stuff that comes out. And the habits.
Yeah.
That's the thing. This is the second fault. The third is that though we practice tantra, we do not achieve the supreme state or the sublime realization. In brief, despising your teacher, despise your teacher and success eludes you. Now, I'm sure you, most of you know a little bit about tantra and so forth. So you know when you engage in the tantric path, right? It involves an initiation. And in that initiation, the teacher spends quite a few hours, this is the Ashoka Tantra, often spends quite a few hours generating themselves as the deity. They sit up there, and then your job, it starts off pretty much, you take refuge, you take your bodhicitta vows, you're given tantric vows. After, you're instructed to see your lama as the Buddha, as a fully enlightened being. There was, as I said, it just spent a couple of hours self-generating themselves as the deity. So as we go in, we see a human being sitting there, the outer form. But we're instructed, even though we see that, to actually acknowledge them as the real deal, the Buddha, fully awakened being. So how can we really sort of think of, well, you know, Buddhas have said that they will help us until the end of samsara. So how do they help us as human beings?
Through the teachings.
Yep, through the teachings. How do they appear to us? And yeah, so this is the normal one. They'll appear just like this. Well, we have to go, okay, nevertheless, they are actually fully enlightened beings. Well, how do the Buddhas help human beings? Is appearing as human beings. How do they help dogs and animals?
By hearing as dogs and animals.
Yeah. So it's whatever's most useful for that being that they can accept and take a teaching. And of course, what happens is over time you'll take a number of different initiations from a number of different teachers, and you can see all of them as a fully enlightened Buddha, in particular that deity that you've just been initiated into.
Do the Buddhas not appear like as a full-on enlightened thing, because that might make us think, oh, they're going to hand enlightenment to me rather than I've got to actually work for it myself?
No, they do. But not to us.
So it's more of a karma that we don't
have. Yeah, because our karma prevents us seeing that.
So they just can't appear to us that way.
That's right.
Even if they want to, they can't.
Yeah, unless you have the karma to actually engage with them at that level, they're not going to appear to you like that.
Even if they want to.
It's just like they want to save all sentient beings. Hey, guess what? They're still here suffering. They want to do that, don't they?
I was wondering if it was something to do with, like, if they appear as a human, they're on our level, they can guide us, you know, we have to do the work. Like, don't think, oh, here's a saviour, he's going to save me, and I've just got to do nothing.
That's right. That's what it's like, isn't it?
It's a bit like what Venerable Gendon mentioned about the blind person given retinas.
Couldn't
process the data.
Those nuts.
So, like, we couldn't process it because we don't have the necessary grounding to perceive it.
So a lot of that grounding comes through the path of seeing. So, we've got to actually purify the mind before we can actually see the purified presence of an enlightened being.
But we can feel their
presence. Oh, for sure. Presence. Yeah, yeah.
We just can't see it.
That's right. Our eyes are not commonly obscured. See the higher aspect of a Buddha, for instance.
So, like, a metaphor would be like, I can't explain, you know, calculus to an ant. I just can't do it. Even if I want to, I can't do it. Right.
Well, you know, you can do it, but they're not going to
understand
it.
This
is what they say, that the Buddhas are always here, they've always been present. But you could intuit it though, over time and practice, and you get a bit of purification happening at the same place. In fact, I remember a story one time, there was a party going up to a monastery in the mountains, and I was going on nightfall. It was dark, and it looked like they might get stuck in the mountain and not make it to the monastery and die out there. They go around the corner, there's a little boy there. Boys, I know where the monastery is, I'll take you there. So he leads you off to the monastery, they bang on the door, and he just sort of vanishes. And they come and say, oh, this little kid, what kid? And this kid, somebody says a manifestation of Manjushri. But you don't know. You know, that's the thing. So this is what the other piece of advice is saying. Don't insult anybody because they could be a bodhisattva, you know, or like say a Buddha, because they're going to appear in ways that we could relate to. So you can see these two slides have to do with our tantra. So though we practice tantra, it's like seeking the hells. So even if we practice tantra with much hardship, it would be like attaining hell. So incorrectly relying on authentic guide sort of corrupts the internal psychological environment. It renders even the most advanced meditation practices harmful and destructive to yourself. In brief, despising your teacher produces many, many difficulties. Now, again, so what can happen is that in the, you know, like you do your, you've taken a teacher. And at the time, you've done all your analysis, everything's like hunky-dory, you go, okay, good. But then, later on, something happens, something changes, you know, and then you discover that. Like this has happened a number of times already, especially in Australia, where the behaviour of the teacher becomes more recognisably faulty. And then, so then people lose their faith in their teacher. They despise them, but they certainly don't think of them as a Buddha anymore. Yeah, I remember one of our students at one time, this one particular lama, he was engaged in some sexual misconduct and some violence towards students. And I'm pretty sure she didn't know about this, but I did. And she wanted to go, and he was giving a Tara initiation. And she was going to take this initiation. But I knew that this woman also had quite a lot of trauma in her past. She'd been raped, basically, in the past. And I thought, oh, boy, if you go and take this initiation now, and then later on you find out about this behaviour, you know, I know what type of what you are. She's a pretty fiery woman. She's going to just chuck the baby out with the bathwater. I was going, and then, of course, really, we could be quite antagonistic towards Tantra and teachers. So, boy, this was a hard one for me. It was like, how to say this to her without destroying her confidence? Because he was a good teacher, a very good teacher. In the Dharma, persistent behaviour was, you know, in this instance, I'm not correct. And I thought, if you take this, now you're really tied to them, you know, and it's too late to back out. Anyway, I suggested that you wait a bit and you know, take the initiation from another teacher, but keep taking teachings from them, but not initiations. It's very hard, you know, to do this because you still don't maintain respect for the other person, for their good qualities, but also, again, just like acknowledge what they just did and see the problems that might arise from it, commit yourself fully to them, like without knowing about it.
Eddie, did that work out okay for the student? Sure, and now you feel like that was the right thing to do?
Yeah. I mean, you're still teaching. I mean, people get a great deal of benefit from this person. But again, there's this sort of rupture.
Was it really you as a teacher knowing this particular student and knowing some of her background and so how she would relate to that teacher? And
yeah, well, when she discovered this, problematic. For sure it would. I thought, you know, better tell you first and then you can make your own mind up after that. It's up to you after that. The next one is, this is a biggie, eh? No fresh knowledge and realizations degenerate. Says here, Lama Zopa says we will not generate any fresh knowledge or realizations, and our previous knowledge and realizations will degenerate. In brief, you forget what you've learned. Okay, next one is, in this life we suffer illness and the like. So Lama Zopa says, we will be afflicted, even in this life, by illness and other undesirable things. Is an incorrect reliance on a spiritual teacher causes immediate mental and physical distress. Because harboring a chronic resentment breaks the internal psychological alignment that's needed with guru devotion. And of course, you become quite stressful. In brief, contempt towards the guru produces everything unwanted. So I think it's important to look at these words like contempt and resentment, all these sort of things. You know, like check your own mind. See, is my mind doing that? Otherwise, it's not, you might not fall into the sort of category, you know.
So this is like all about, like, once we've taken a guru, right? This isn't about just thinking about this, about a particular Dharma teacher.
No, no, this is like once you, because you know, these, you can take a teacher and then these then behave in these ways.
Yeah, but like if I walk up to a center and there's...
And finally, this from the school. The future lives, this is the future lives will wander endlessly in the lower realms. Endless rebirths in the lower realms. And here's, I think, the worst part of all to me, personally, it's this here. In future lives, we lack virtuous friends. There's no opportunities to practice Dharma. So it took me, I look back at Inta, right? So Inta had to get to her 40s before she actually met Lama Nishi, and I was like, I was the same. You get to like 40 odd years, seems to be better. If you're younger, well, good on you, lucky you. So what normally happens, of course, is it goes through a number of difficulties, trying to work out like what's the meaning of life, what am I doing here, what's my purpose, all these sort of things. And me in particular, I was really interested in the truth, what's true. And I could not find answers to my questions. I could get some of them, and most of them, like I did a big study of all the religions, and just basically went no, and only Buddhism was the last one left. Made sense to me, I thought, yeah, sounds great, but who's practicing it? Who's doing it? Because if no one's doing it, I don't care, they didn't forget about it, right? So I thought, well, the only person I know who might be doing this is the Dalai Lama. So at this stage, I was in prison thinking about this, and I thought, okay, if I ever get out of here, I'm going to go and see the Dalai Lama and check out and see if he actually walks the talk that I've been reading about. And before I met him, of course, I met Geshe Tashi Tsering, I met a few other people, and it all said, okay, it's all above board. People are following these teachings, they're actually engaged in them, and I can see these people are quite different than I am. Now, I mean, they're human beings. But boy, they're a lot more patient than I am, they're a lot funnier than I am. Now, they've got a lot of good qualities that I don't have. And I know that you can have them, you might not have these good qualities, but you can have them. But you've got to work for them. You know, if you don't want to have the bad qualities, you've got to work at it. You've got to stop them somehow. And these people had done it. Okay, it's a realistic, you know, spiritual endeavor to engage in. Whereas the other ones, they just don't make sense to me, intellectually. So, when Kitsa Rinpoche, married emptiness and dependent arising, that was it for me. That's it. So I haven't, not looked back since. And I think if I did not know about Dharma, man, how must have just left me in jail. There's no point being real free, being outside the walls. What's the real point? It's the same old, isn't it? In fact, in one of the cells, and we're having a little discussion about what's the most important thing in the world. I don't know why that came up, And so one of the people said, freedom, And I looked at her and I thought, yeah, I can just imagine what you do once you're free. You'd be out of jail and just go back and do what you want you were doing before. So I think, it is freedom, but not that sort of freedom. Anyway, so without a virtuous friend, kind virtuous friend, you just don't know how to behave, do you? You don't know how to change your mind.
Or maybe there doesn't seem to be a point in
changing your mind,
without that kind of connection to somebody.
Okay, let's do a meditation. Oh, any questions so far? So we've got 8 here. Of these 8, which one do you think is the most important for you? So my thing is, for me, it's like, okay, you behave badly towards a spiritual friend now. It just makes it really hard for you to meet one later.
Mm-hmm.
This is cause and effect, isn't it? You put the causes in, well, there's an effect that follows. Yeah, so this is basically saying that, you know, like, what if you've taken a teacher, you've adopted the teacher, don't let these attitudes creep into the relationship. You know, you can see them all sort of based around fear, resentment, ego, stuff. Okay, so let's do our first meditation. Let's get comfortable in your seats, folks. Get an upright posture, keep the shoulders drop. Place your hands wherever they feel at ease. And just let your breath find its own natural rhythm. And as the body breathes itself, imagine tension being released from your face, neck and chest. And bring an altruistic attitude to this meditation. And just for a moment or two, just consider how much energy we waste by searching for faults and flaws in people who try to help us. They're criticizing the spiritual guide that rejects the source of wisdom and cuts off all future guidance. And for us, wisdom begins to dawn when we see that our criticism only darkens our own view of the teacher and the teachings. In brief, when we hold anger towards a spiritual guide, we block our own inner growth. A mind filled with resentment is like an upside down jar sitting out in the rain. So how does holding a grudge affect your own peace of mind? So a grudge is very much like a hot coal that burns your own hand while you hold on to it. Now, faulty practice blocks deep realizations. It traps the mind in lower states. So what changes when you focus on the lessons rather than the person? Where your mind becomes open, it's flexible, and it's ready to receive new insights. How might you protect your own clarity of mind when others disappoint you? You might be able to see their faults as reminders of what not to do, and also as a reminder to build up your own inner strength. If you can, from today onwards, make a resolution to move away from the habit of finding faults in a teacher. And may this practice leave you feeling grounded, clear and at peace with yourself. And breathing in. Exhale. Now we come to the general, to the benefits. So there are four general benefits of guru devotion, and then we move on to the next eight. Now, one really simple way of meditating on this is like you'll see the list of the qualities. the way if you want to meditate on this is you know the list, and what you do is you place your teacher up in front of you, visualize your teacher, and then name the qualities, and then see the light come over you and wash over you, so that their qualities are passed to you. This is the simplest way of showing devotion to the teacher in practice. The four general benefits of guru devotion. The first is you receive blessings. So in brief, a blessing is a mind changed, the mind changing. That's what blessing is. And it's not, well, it changes from a negative state to a positive state. That's, when that takes place, that's the blessing. So you receive blessings by relying upon that spiritual mentor. Secondly, you're protected from delusions. Your merit's protected, and you are protected from having your realizations delayed. Okay, let's look at each one. So first of all, receiving blessings. So again, it's blessing takes place is when your sort of character is like uplifted because you've had a change of mind. In fact, one of the Dzogchen books are written by His Holiness. There's two major Dzogchen books that His Holiness has made commentary on. The first was a really excellent explanation of what a blessing is. And that's when he's, I think it might also be in the Heart Sutra, where it's really simple, it says your mind changes. Your mind changes, like that's the blessing. And I also remember him saying, I really didn't know what those blessing chords, how a blessing took place there. You ever call them blessing chords? Yeah, you're on right there. It might be the same back to the Bible, but okay, yes, I engage in that practice on that day, because it was often as a given, like you might say, I'll have a retreat or such and such. You recollect it, your mind brightens, so that way, you know, the blessing takes place. So receiving blessings are actually the calls to achieve realizations on the path. That's why it's such an emphasis put on receiving blessings. Uplifting the mind. So aligning with a qualified spiritual friend unlocks internal inspiration. And this accelerates your innate capacity for wisdom. In the graduated path tradition, the first general benefit of a healthy master-disciple alignment is defined as receiving inspirational energy. This is a blessing. This process operates through deep appreciation and conviction in the guide's ethical qualities. When you focus single-pointedly on your guide's verified virtues, your mind creates a powerful resonance with those same traits. This alignment acts like a pristine magnifying glass. So it's often said, they use this analogy where the mentors seem to be like a magnifying glass. And so although we can hear the teachings and read about them and all these sort of things, right? If you've done this, you'll know that change can take place. It's a very slow process and the changes aren't very deep. But if it comes from a living person, then it's a different story. So this sort of answers the blessing. They were also protected from delusion. So negative thoughts don't arise, again, and especially towards the teacher. Yeah, so again, our devotion helps us avoid anger and heresy, which are the major obstacles to happiness and enlightenment. The third is guru devotion protects your merit. Again, you know, so I see this positive thoughts towards the guru support your virtue. So correctly relying on a qualified guide safeguards your positive mental potential by creating sort of an unshakable ethical framework. This will prevent destructive emotional outbursts from demolishing your character development. You've done, I'm just really just getting this together about how well you've done that over all these years, like you're still here, but you know, you've told me about the difficulties you've gone through. Boy.
Eddie, I've got a question from Georgie, if that's okay. Does a blessing have to be a formal thing, or is it simply an occurrence when the mind changes from the teacher?
The occurrence. Talking to you, Georgie. It's the second one. It's not so much. So when you say formally, what do you mean? Yeah, it's a personal thing, and you know sometimes you can really notice it. You know, like one thing, like tears might just come to your eyes. You might suddenly be goosebumps just come all over your body. You know, the physical stuff happens to you, and you know, you sort of change in that moment. And you're also protected from delayed realizations. Why? Because you know, anger and heresy delay the realizations. You know, in this tradition, which is called the graduated path tradition, takes a long time, goes step by step by step on the path. This is the core problem in that tradition is that our internal blind spots prevent us from seeing the shortest route to mental freedom. But when we correct and align our minds with an authentic teacher, we receive a concentrated stream of seasoned guidance that protects us from stagnating. This one here, I can't remember the story, but in this, you often find when you have a look at these type of teachings, little stories to go with each one to demonstrate what the consequences of that are, and oftentimes you'll see the one story where this student couldn't understand something. So he went to his teacher and explained what's going on. And so his teacher asked him about the merit field. And then he said, in the merit field, did you put one of the people that first tilted to the alphabet? And he said, no. He said, put them in. And then he started doing that, and then it all started coming back to him. It was like he'd forgotten somebody who played a major role in his development. He didn't have him in the merit field. And so it was explained. Another, this was all about me. So now for many years, I'd never prostrate coming to the centre. I wouldn't do those four-legged prostrations. I didn't want to do the ones on your knees, you know, just do a short one. Now I put my hands like this, okay, but I'm not doing that other stuff. And that was mainly because of the bad stuff that had happened before about, you know, guru relationship with students. So when I was in New Zealand as a kid growing up, a lot of bad stuff happened. Not with Buddhists, but with Hindus. And I thought, oh, it's still the same, isn't it? It's gurus. Everybody's bowing down and doing all the stuff and giving them everything they ask for. And I was going, no, I'm not doing that. Anyway, it took me quite a few years to suddenly work out that our prostrating was actually an action against your own egocentricity. As soon as I knew that, I was like, okay, no problem. Now I'll do it. And then I started doing like the 35 Buddha practice. And boy, oh boy, like, you know, it just happens. You know, you're stuck, you go off and you do a practice like that, and next thing it's all clear again. It's just all, there's some funny things happen. Sometimes too, you know, I was just thinking one time we went to Melbourne, if you know, where's the big steamer? We went there, Bendigo. Right? And Kensa Rinpoche, Geshe-Tashi Sorin, was there giving a Chiramani Tara. So we went there for that. Boy, that was something else. You know? No kidding, I was looking and I was just sure I saw like Guess was sitting there like that, but Tara was sitting right there. Mm. And I'm just like looking at him, and everything went, you know, it's one of the very best initiations I've ever. Okay, let's meditate. So again, so we've just got these four here. But just try to sit tall, drop the shoulders, elongate the spine. Let your body weight settle fully into the seat. And let the body breathe itself. And altruistically, offer this meditation to the welfare of all living beings. So proper reliance through thought yields four profound benefits. First, there's blessings. In other words, you receive inspiration. This is the core aspect of spiritual transmission. And its best consequence is the rapid awakening of your own innate virtues. So how does your mind, the present, respond when life brings sudden chaos or difficult friction? Protection from delusion requires grounding our choices in the spiritual friend's verified wisdom. So choose to stay steady. Anchor your awareness in the proven wisdom of your teacher. Like finding a calm harbour in a turbulent sea, your thoughts will become open and clear. The protection of our positive potential ensures that our hard-earned habits of patience and kindness are secure. But what happens when a sudden wave of doubt rolls in? So avoiding delayed realizations means aligning your actions with a proven pathway. Remember your guide's deep belief in your potential for full awakening. This will lead to the swiftest possible mental transformation. Like a dormant seed nourished by the rain, your mind breaks free from its hard shell. So this evening, perhaps, select one positive quality from your guide and bring it into your sleep. And just rest in the protective light of their wisdom. You're feeling safe, anchored, and whole. And now breathing in deeply through your nostrils. Exhale through your mouth. Now here we've got eight other qualities that follow, other eight benefits that follow when relying upon an authentic teacher. And the first one, of course, is a really good one. You just get closer to enlightenment. So that's wonderful for us, right? And how do we get closer to enlightenment? By practicing what they say and by making offerings and serving them. And so within the text, this, you know, these two are sort of topics which have commentary on, of course. So let's have a look at these eight. So if you rely upon the spiritual mentor authentically, properly, you please all the Buddhas. Because the Guru is the supreme field of merit. So a little while ago, you know, we have different centers sometimes come here and make offerings and look at the place. So we had some people come from maybe a Pali monastery, And they came and they looked at the thing, they were quite shocked to see that the Dalai Lama's head is above the Buddha's. But of course, when you move into the Mahayana, what normally happens, of course, is you're introduced to Tantra, Tantra being one part of the Mahayana. And so in that, of course, the guru is seen to be a Buddha, and this is not how they do it in the Pali tradition. The second benefit, the third benefit is that you're not harmed by evil friends. Blessings of the guru into the devotional mind. This correct devotion to a virtuous friend protects us from harmful influences, both internal, like delusions, and external, like unskillful friends. Again, another simple benefit is that delusions and negativities naturally cease. You know, why you understand what's to be abandoned and what's to be adopted. Now, of course, the goal of a guru really is to make you become self-reliant, to rely upon your own inner guru. So you have an outer guru, a teacher. Their real goal is to introduce you to this inner guru, right, which is the empty nature of the mind. And of course, you understand that, what's to be abandoned is everything that's hurtful and harmful to yourself and others. What's to be adopted, everything skillful, useful and good. All our realizations of the paths increase. So again, like if you ever looked at how the path is set out, in the Mahayana you've got like paths and grounds, and this is not so easy to understand how you move from one stage of mental development to the next. So teachers, of course, help you do that through their instructions and through conversations with them afterwards. Here's a fantastic phenomenon. You never lack a teacher in future lives. So this life is responsible for how things will turn out in future lives, especially the last moment of this life, the last moments. So the correct devotion to a virtuous friend in this life ensures we meet wise teachers in future lives. That creates a lot of positive karma. Yes, this is one of the things I really love about the Tibetan tradition. How when great teachers leave this life, they go looking for them. They start looking for them, they know they're going to come back. So they're not going to go to find them and re-educate them again and start them off again so they can keep trying to help us. And then we don't fall into the lower realms. This karma is quickly purified. Now, I've said this quite a number of times, is that there are so many positive things about the Dharma. You've just got to find one to become really familiar with. So at the time of your death, your mind will naturally go there. So who is it for Christians? It's often Jesus, Mother Mary, God Himself. You know, with those priests, even a person who's never a Christian, they try to convert them right there and then, to give them that positive mind state. And so you can remember any of the deities, just remember it's also your mentor. It's not just the deity on its own, it's the manifestation of enlightenment, which is the manifestation of your teacher, the guru. Yeah, and many people, I've sat with a few people who have died in this life. So one of them, just remembering now, so this is the difference between a mother and her son. Right? So the mother practiced as a Christian, and she would often go to the churches, light a candle, she's begin donating to the church, that got on well with the nuns. And when she passed away, of course, the nuns came to sit with her. And it was a very easy going out, really easy. Now, her son had no belief in afterlife or God, religion, anything like that. Right? And when he passed, there was quite a bit of struggle, like at the end. And I said, well, also what's not his mind is doing. Because I know his mother's mind was just resting on Jesus. We've got to try and find something of the Dharma that we can actually hold on. Like Dharma's called like a raft, isn't it? It's going to get you from, you know, from this, the shore of suffering, to the shore of release. But you can also see that it can also act as a raft to take us from this life into the next. And all the Dharma's are spoken, the basis is virtue, isn't it? It's just ethics, basically. If you're looking, you know, if the mind is filled with your recollection or remembrance of your teacher, you get a pass. Yeah. Zuri, you know, you've been training yourself for all the time you've been done before you die to see your teacher. My teacher is a Buddha. If you've taken tantric initiation, even that would be, you know, suppose you can't, well, I can't do the self-generation, suppose all that goes away, right? But you still have this lot of warmth towards the teacher. But you still really appreciate them. And so we find this last thing is that you effortlessly accomplish all your wishes. When we practice according to the Guru's advice. Through that story, I'm just thinking now, Drom Trompa saying to that fellow, you know, you're doing really good, but so much better to practice Dharma. You know, and then he got up and said, oh, I wonder what that means. Better read something. And Drom Trompa was really good reading Dharma texts, but so much better to practice Dharma. Mm. You know, and then he gets over, maybe I should walk around the stupa. So he does, and second in that way, it's just wonderful. But so much better to practice Dharma. You find it in discussion with one, what does he mean? No? And ask them. And I think the answer is tremendous, is let go of this life. Now, before we so questions, anybody? So, like you see here, basically, we've got like 8 benefits. Then there were those 4, so 12 altogether. You're just going to take 1 or 2, you know? And then I'll ask you this next week, I'll say, okay, give me 2 benefits of relying upon a teacher correctly, and then 1 of the faults when you don't, what might happen? And like I said, find one that resonates with you. That's the one that will stick in your head. You can look for a commentary on it and so forth before you move to another one. So, you know, I've often wondered about these lists and whether do I need to know all the whole list? Apparently, no. The major thing is to change your mind. You've got all these different things. You've got to find one that'll make a difference and start with that. It's not required you do every one of them. But you've got to find some way where your mind, where it resonates with your mind and you think, that's what I want. But for me, it's like being not having a teacher again in the future. Because I know how hard it was when you don't have one and you're sort of floundering, you know, you're trying all these sorts of things, but you're just getting into more and more trouble, which I was. And things are not getting better, they're getting worse. Now, and then you find it, and it's like I said, with the question of the penance arising, it's like, oh my God, that's it. Things exist dependently, then be very blooming careful about how you behave, right? I think we've come to the end of our class. George's got a question, yeah, good.
Just saying, so this is all why it can take years to really adopt a teacher, because we have to check.
But again, George, remember, like we're getting older, right? Do check. And also, really, ideally, they've got the 10, but then it also says, you know, it's very hard to find somebody with exactly these 10. So, you know, a portion of them. You need, like I said, 2 things. One is you've got to use your mind, your intelligence about this. So you're checking, but you also want to have a warm feeling towards them. Right, so just one without the other is not good enough. Right? Feeling warmth towards someone, well, that's very nice, but you know, we feel warm to people who treat us badly too. and they're not very skillful and so forth. But if we're just intelligent, that's sort of a bit cold. You know, we've got to sort of feel as if, you know, we like this person, we trust them, I can put my life in their hands. You know, and we know that, and so I can do that because of these qualities I've checked, I trust them. So I think it requires a work on both sides, Georgie. Anybody you'd like to ask anything or Tracy? Okie dokie. Well, what's our takeaway? Well, we got 8 of the faults of incorrect devotion and 12 of the benefits of correct devotion. So yeah, you need to know, get 2 for correct devotion for next week and 1 of the bad side. Please try and do that. Otherwise, like I said, this goes on for years and years and years. We just get older and older and older and nothing's sticking. Something has to stick, right? Otherwise, we don't make a change. Okay, so next week. So I'm going to have a look at, there's some material on FPMT notes, page 31. And the meditations on page 12 and page 1, they should be up there. Like I said again, you know what to do here, just get 2 of the advantages of correct devotion and 1 fault of incorrect devotion. And next week we'll look at training in faith. This is the real, you know, where the rubber meets the road, probably the most difficult thing to do of all. So let's dedicate the energy that we've created tonight. So just think of some people that you could who might actually benefit through this dedication. Specific people and then all sentient beings. Due to these virtuous actions, I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into their enlightened state. May the Supreme draw body to them, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sufferings of the world. Is the holiness long life? The wish granting, wish fulfilling joy, source of every single benefit and happiness in this world. To the incomparably kind thinking vessel, I beseech, let all your wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And finally, Rinpoche's discovery and swift return. In holding and spreading the Buddha's precious and complete teachings through explanation and practice, he wore the armor of patience and was never discouraged. Incomparable, venerable Buddha, to you I make this request.